It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome, everybody, to a WFUV Sports production, Pound for Pound, our MMA little sector of our WFUV Sports world. I'm here joined by Will Jing and Mati Dembele. Mati Dembele, one of our MMA experts. Will Jing, an expert in wrestling, matter of fact, also kind of has some expertise in the MMA world as well, kind of getting him incorporated. We'd love to get him incorporated more now. As we talked about last episode, we're in a bit of a new era around here with Pound for Pound. Andrew Canary, the creator, founder, the face of Pound for Pound, graduates. And now for people like me, Zach, Will, Mati, it's a new generation, and it's a new era of Pound for Pound, similar maybe to Triple H and what he's doing at WWE. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. We'll talk about wrestling and kind of incorporate that a little bit later in the show. For now, we kind of find ourselves, gentlemen, at a really special kind of moment in the MMA calendar in the 2024 year, maybe one of the bigger moments and bigger kind of opportunities in the 2024 calendar for a real big splash for the UFC specifically, and that'll be UFC 302 at Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, tomorrow night, matter of fact, Saturday night. And it's going to be a fantastic event. I don't want to get into all that right now. Before we get into all that, Will Jing, Mati Dembele, how are you? I'll start with you, Will. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm at home right now. I'm still spending most of my time across from Fordham because, you know, everything's there. And I'm somebody that hates moving. So just moving back home and then back there in like a couple months is just not worth the hassle. Everything's already there. It's convenient. But at home dealing with some doctor's appointments and stuff, you know, everything just crammed into this one weekend. But yeah, I'm doing pretty well. What about you, Mati?
Yeah, real transitional period for all college kids right now. Everyone's either moving or getting jobs or losing jobs. It's a real kind of crazy time for all us crazy college kids right now. Mati Dembele, how are you doing right now?
You know what? It's been a crazy day for me as well. I've been running back and forth, you know, just searching for jobs. As you said, it's kind of a bit of shadowing. Yeah, getting older and this adulting thing's not easy, but I'm always down to talk some cage. It's a pretty big week. I mean, like, we could witness a changing of the guard. So I'm pretty excited for the implications, and I'm ready to talk cage.
Yeah, as the real world problems creep in, we tend to appreciate MMA and wrestling and things like that more and more. And with that said, we can jump right into it. UFC 302, it's coming off, you obviously, UFC 300, massive event for the UFC, as all the round numbers are for Dana and his company. Now, coming off that pretty soon, UFC 302 seems also like a super card. We're going to kind of more specifically just talk about this co-main event and main event, but as just an event in general, I want to kind of get your opinion, Mati. This is such kind of just a big event for the UFC, as I said.
I mean, yeah, again, like, hands down, one of the better cards. I know we're just coming off of the high of UFC 300 not too long ago, but if you look up and down this card, Yalton Almeida, right? You got other guys like, oh my God, I could go on forever and forever. Sean Strickland, Paulo Costa, as we're going to go on and talk about. I mean, and then the creme of the creme, I mean, Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev for the title at 155. I mean, like, guys, you got to appreciate it. Dana White does, again, what boxing doesn't. And it's not like, I want to talk bad about boxing. I love boxing, but always puts on the deepest cards year in and year out, month in and month out, really. And yeah, I'm super excited for this one in particular.
Yeah, that point you made there, we see kind of a constant trend over the last 5 years or so, UFC kind of going up in direction and boxing going the other way. And I think cards like this are a big reason for that. Will Jing, kind of just throwing it to you, what kind of show and what kind of spectacle do you think those people going to Newark are kind of in for tomorrow night?
I think they're in for a really good show. I think UFC, I mean, as you guys alluded to, they managed to get top names in for each show to give, each show that's kind of allure and its pop. And I think this show, we're going to be talking about our two main events, and that's going to definitely bring some people in. And I'm happy that UFC is doing well, because recently I invested in some TKO stock. So anything that's UFC, WWE doing good, it's good for me, it's good for the fans, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that relationship a little bit later now that we have you here, Will. But yeah, UFC and WWE never tied to each other closer than they are now. And yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. But getting into this card, the co-main event of this card, Paulo Costa versus Sean Strickland. The Sean Strickland side to this entire fight and kind of where it goes from here after this kind of really intrigues me in a lot of ways, and I would love to get into that. But first, I'm gonna throw it to Madi. Madi, Paulo Costa in an interesting spot here. I don't really know where he goes from here or what a loss or a win does for him. Can you just kind of give us some insight on that?
So when I saw this fight originally pop up, I was like going for the gold, right? That's probably what I would bill it as. If we're talking about Paulo Costa, Borrachina is what they call him. I mean, like, is it his coming out party? Like, I've been waiting for a very, very long time. And we had conversations around the podcast of how good actually is Paulo Costa? Because in my heart of hearts, I believe he should be a lot better, right? He's a good power puncher. He has good movement. He cuts off the ring extremely well. He fights on the front foot. He uses his leg kicks well. But if you look at his resume, I mean, he has a win over Luke Rockhold. I mean, Luke Rockhold was a champion in middleweight like years ago, and that really shouldn't have been a fight at all. And then he has a UD loss to Robert Whittaker, right? Which was really like who's fighting for the belt next. So I feel like where he stands now is kind of in a stagnant position, right? He should be better. Maybe he's that thing, but we haven't seen it yet. And there's never been a better opportunity against a guy like Sean Strickland. High volume striker. He works his jab extremely well. It's unorthodox, it's sloppy, and he's gonna muck it up. He has capable power. He checks his leg kicks really well. So stylistically, I mean, this is gonna be one on the feet. I really don't think any of the guys have the pedigree on the ground. Maybe Costa has the edge there. But like for both guys, I mean, like if you're Sean, you get a second ch title shot eventually sometime down the road. And if you're Paulo Costa, you're really, really a true contender instead of a guy like Vettori or Cannonier who's just in the division and just there as a gatekeeper.
Yeah, that's an intro. You made a point there that was interesting, kind of talking about Paulo, because Sean's reputation, especially recently, has kind of trended toward the direction where a win, a W next to his name on your resume is very, very valuable, and the value of that win has gone up and up. Obviously, losing the belt is not necessarily ideal, but still, with that resume, the Izzy win, it seems like a very valuable win to have. And for a guy like Paulo Costa, who is kind of an attraction right now and is kind of trying to make that transition from attraction to contender, it is kind of one of those fights that really legitimizes a fighter, at least in the heads of real UFC fans, real cage heads, as I like to say. But I also, from the Sean perspective, as I can kind of transition it to there, as you alluded to there, another title shot has to be in the wings for him. I mean, obviously, it seems like Dana maybe wants a Du Plessis Izzy super fight, maybe in the Sphere. I don't even know. I don't know what Dana's up to in his long-term booking, as I like to call it with Dana, because it's basically booking. And I really think that Sean puts himself in a perspective, in a position here with a win where he's undeniable for that shot. Either Du Plessis gets it and he just gets the rematch right away, and Izzy continues to sit on the sideline, or he sets himself up for them to go kill each other, and then he gets that winner. So I think kind of a win here for Sean puts himself in a great position where honestly he can just go kind of hang out for the next couple of months, maybe do some content, put his name out there, get some crazy quotes going online, and then it can come back to a title shot. And I think that would be just so valuable to his journey and kind of what he's built over the last 6 to 8 months and how impressive it's been. But yeah, Will, kind of just getting your perspective on this fight, maybe even kind of a prediction from you as well.
I think this fight is, and this is the case for basically every UFC fight, more so than I think something like wrestling. Each fight definitely has a lot of stakes, and each one can send you in two very different directions. And I think this is one of those cases. Both fighters are at not, I wouldn't say a turning point, but at one of those junctures where they could really either propel themselves to the top into contention, or they could kind of just keep flounder where they're at. And I think both of them, that they had that, they're in that spot. And I think Sean Strickland comes in as the favorite, having a better pedigree, I think, and having beaten Izzy. So I think he comes in as a favorite. I think he probably is going to win based off of what I've seen. I mean, his name has been floating around a lot, doing a lot of good stuff. So if I had to pick a winner, I'd probably go with him. But I think either way, Goss is not going to go down easy.
No, I don't think he's ever gone down easy and will ever go down easy. We can kind of transition. You kind of said stakes there, kind of gave me a great another natural transition into the main event. It feels like the stakes can't be higher than they are in the main event with Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev. I'll set the scene just kind of briefly here, but I want to just get your guys kind of talk here, especially from Dustin's perspective. Islam Makhachev, pound for pound, probably the best fighter in the world right now. Just been dominant in his career, dominant with that belt, with the gold around his waist. And Dustin Poirier, a guy with trials and tribulations, contender, not contender. He's been through the ringer. He's been in the headlines. He's been on the mat. He's really done it all in the UFC world. And now, kind of at the twilight of his career, he finds himself in a position after a massive win in his last fight where he has a chance to get that illustrious championship, not an interim championship, the real deal, and to really kind of cement his legacy as this almost transcendent generational fighter. And so that's just kind of the stage that has been set, a real Drago Rocky kind of situation here. All going down in the main event in Newark on Saturday night, tomorrow night. Obviously, before Amadi, I forgot to get your prediction on the last fight. So maybe give us co-main event prediction and then kind of just give me a general sense of just the size and the magnitude of this main event and kind of just how much of a storyline it really feels. Not how much, how storybook it feels, my
I
friend.
mean, Sean Strickland, I've seen in the past, Sean Strickland has struggled with big time power punchers. Think back to his fight against Alex Pereira. Alex Pereira is a different animal. He sucks the energy out of the room, and and Sean looked like he saw a ghost when he fought Pereira. Do I think Costa has that same, I want to say juice. I always say that a lot, but do I think he has that same juice? I don't. I think he has the power to do it, but I haven't seen it yet. It's like you're just waiting and you're waiting. And sometimes it's just beyond analysis. Maybe a guy just doesn't have it. I felt the same way about Gilbert Burns in welterweight, right? I thought one day Gilbert Burns would be champion because I saw the way he reacted when he lost to Kamaru Usman, a guy that he thought he could genuinely beat. And this was Usman's way up to the top. And I was like, you know what? This guy's going to be champion. And it hasn't happened. I think Paulo Costa is much of the same. If Sean is able to land that quick 1-2, because he's not a great combination puncher, but he does have a really, really nice 1-2, and he can muck it up and just make it a dirty fight to make Costa uncomfortable. I gotta go with Sean Strickland here. And he's fought guys at the highest level. He has championship experience, and Sean generally makes fights his type of style. So give me Sean Strickland. I would love Costa to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matty, in a lot of that analysis. I love the Gilbert Burns comparison as well. I have a friend at home who's a massive Gilbert Burns fan. He really feels like one of the bigger what ifs in the UFC world, kind of for where his trajectory was and then kind of how it petered out. And it didn't even feel like he necessarily didn't live up to expectation. It just felt like more circumstantially he kind of fell on hard times. But that's another conversation for another day. Moving in to the main event, Madi, just kind of just general thoughts on the storybook kind of feel of it and kind of the magnitude of it as well.
I mean, two of the biggest fighters in the world of the UFC. I mean, like, you couldn't ask for a better fight. Cordova, Zach Cordova, our producer, I mean, he wanted to be on this episode because if you look at both guys among some of the best fighters in the lightweight division, which is no joke, you're talking about a division with Du Bronx and Gaethje and Michael Chandler and Dariush and Dan Hooker and RDA is still around for all of my Rafael Dos Anjos fans, Paul Felder. This is an extremely deep division, and it has been historically when they had Khabib, Tony Ferguson, and Conor McGregor all here. I mean, Islam Makhachev, if you take a look at the record from the Khabib camp, I mean, like Volkanovski, you beat him twice, Charles Oliveira, Bobby Green, Dan Hooker, Thiago Moises, Drew Dober, off the top of my head, Armin Saryukin, who's also going to get a title shot too soon. I mean, like just guys on top of guys at the highest level. Same thing for Dustin Poirier. Win or loss, he always manages to make it a great fight. Benoit Saint-Denis, who was a contender, just beat him. Split the two between Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler. I mean, he fights Oliveira, he fights Khabib, he fights Max Holloway, Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis, Eddie. I mean, like so many guys for each, and I wouldn't mind seeing the belt swing in either direction. It's just that I believe Islam is like a supernova. The same way we feel about Alex Pereira and how he's just a guy. There's no other explanation for it. He's just a guy. I feel like Islam Makhachev is really like that. Dustin Poirier is probably a better all-around fighter. I think his boxing's a bit slicker and he's solid on the ground, but Islam Makhachev coming from that Khabib camp, it's like how can you pick against a guy like that? I mean, like Zach again, I know he wants Dustin Poirier to knock him out, and he does have the power to do that. Just ask Conor McGregor, but I gotta go with Makhachev here. It's one of those things like John Jones, just prove me wrong. Until you do it, you're not beating Islam Makhachev. I have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me.
Yeah.
A lot of what you're saying, the motto in the UFC is style makes fights. Feels like this fight has that element to it, and kind of the WWE's motto is storylines make fights, and it feels like that is kind of true here as well. Kind of lives in both worlds. I'll naturally throw it to Will here. We come kind of naturally from a world, Will, kind of calling myself a wrestling fan as well, where we're in love with the storyline. We're in love with kind of the way they can tell a story through the wrestling and through the art. And kind of here, it feels like the story and the art of it is really on display, kind of front and center. Do you feel that at all? And does it feel almost kind of WWE-esque, kind of this buildup and what this could become either way?
I feel like it feels more like a spontaneous thrown together dream match than something that's been built
Right.
up. I think that it has the story of not only two superstars going head to head, but also two guys that have some different skill sets, I would say. Mahdi alluded to the fact that Dustin might be a bit of a better boxer, and Islam might be better, elsewhere, and also possibly stamina wise. So it's also a battle of that, and to see that come out is going to be really interesting. It's hard to pick against Islam Makhachev just because of his resume. The same thing I said about Sean Strickland earlier, and the fact that, I mean, I have a little bit of experience like with boxing, and it's just like, dude, it's hard to even in that that's not fully MMA, but just to I know how difficult it is to just keep going for, round after round after round. And so I don't, it's hard to say that Dustin's going to be able to keep up if Islam's messing him up, especially early on. So I think a lot of this one comes down to just who's going to make the first mistake. And I think whoever makes the first mistake is going to be the one to go down this way.
Yep.
A lot of the technical stuff there, obviously you have some experience. I can't go against it 100%. But before you said that, kind of alluding to the star power in this main event, throwing it back to you, Will, kind of talking about more in a grander scope, the UFC and the stars that they've built, especially Will, you not being immersed in it, watching every weekend and really being this heavy UFC person, but at more of a kind of not a casual, because I think that would be disrespectful, but whatever's in between that. How do you see the importance of the stars that they're building and kind of these cards that they're making and kind of the popularity of that kind of brings to the UFC and the eyes that that brings to the UFC?
I think that's important. I think it's important on the front end just to bring people in and to attract the viewers, but you also have to keep the viewers. I think that, otherwise that it's like the star power and the names and the initial promotions and whatever doesn't mean anything. But I think they've been doing a pretty good job. I mean, just I think UFC continues to get more popular as we see, and even with the creation of this podcast, I mean, all around it's just growing, and you start to see these n names come up on places like ESPN and Bleacher Report more and more than they ever have before. Especially I think gambling's also contributed to it. So I think, I mean, UFC is just growing all around, and the superstar power definitely has something to do with it. I know that even though I'm not the biggest UFC guy, I've like seen a lot of these names plenty of times. So where it's like, Sean Strickland, I mean, other than Swerve Strickland, I mean, they're pretty similar names, but I've seen Sean Strickland's name plenty of times too. Obviously guys like Conor McGregor have helped it grow initially. And then, now guys like Izzy, Dustin Poirier, I kind of see it all the time. So I think building the star power is important. It's good. And I think that UFC has been doing a pretty solid job with it.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned Dustin there. I want to throw it to you, Madi, just talking about that underdog story, kind of what I alluded to in the beginning and where he was and then kind of where he is now, and just how improbable that was. And then also on top of that, after maybe just kind of a prediction on this main event as well.
I
If you
mean,
can, I don't know if that's too much. I can make it a little less as well, whatever you prefer.
like Dustin Poirier, again, he takes every fight on the chin, win, lose, or draw. I mean, you've seen him from his earlier days where he got dominated by Conor in the first fight, and then Conor never beat him again. And guys like Justin Gaethje, who hits like a Mack truck, he's able to take one win in their little two fight saga there. You fight Khabib, you lose, it's a submission, but nonetheless, it's the fact that he's willing to take a fight anytime, anywhere. And it's the type of attitude that it's almost like an old school boxer's type of attitude, right? You fight often, you perform well, and regardless as if you take home a belt or not, I mean, you're still a bad, you know what? And he held that belt kind of like in a roundabout way. I made a joke there, but he held the belt, and that was for good reason there. He's a fighter's fighter. He's a people's fighter, really. And now he finally gets his title shot. And maybe, just maybe, he's able to dethrone a guy like Islam Makhachev. It's not impossible, because I do think, I will say this for this fight. I think Dustin is the guy that has to be perfect for a single second. I think to beat a guy like Dustin, Islam has to be perfect over the course of a 5-round fight. But Dustin has to be perfect for a single second. If he's able to catch him big, because Dustin's fought big time punches. He's fought Conor McGregor, who's probably the most dynamic in the promotion's history. He took shots from Justin Gaethje. I mean, and he's able to return it as well. If he's able to survive like Islam's like slick, clean style and fight on the front foot, he has to make sure he doesn't go on the back foot. Then I think he'll be able, if he lands it, I think he'll be able to put Islam away. I'm going with Islam with my brain, but my heart is telling me Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, and that's a common theme, Madi, we always have, where I feel like when we make these predictions on these massive fights, we're always saying that our heart is one way and our head is the other. This feels like the pinnacle of that in so many ways, especially for the people who have been closely tied to this Dustin rise, to where he is now. It feels like everybody wants Dustin to win and everybody feels like he can. But I think at the end of the day, everyone also knows, especially those people know how good Islam is and that maybe there's no one better in the world than Islam in that octagon. And the metaphorical kind of chips are stacked against Dustin in so many ways. But then again, that's when Dustin has shown that he's at his best. So I can kind of see where the natural confliction for UFC fans is kind of going and kind of moving forward. I want to get your kind of thoughts on this. Will, does Dustin go into just in a world here? Let's act like we're in a world Dustin wins. We could even put a guillotine on it just to have fun. But he wins on the guillotine and has the belt around his waist. Where does Dustin go after this?
I think, I mean, that would be a huge win, just rocketing him in
Right, because I feel like we're living, I feel like we all just naturally think Islam's going to win, but in another world where he does win, I've been wondering this the last couple of days. What is after that? Does he retire?
I mean, if I could jump in here, let me
Yeah, Marty, yeah.
I mean, does I mean again, lightweight, 155 pounds, historically has been one of the deeper like even today, like I'm trying to think of maybe bantamweight, maybe 155 has consistently brought us back, like Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson, and Khabib all at one time. And again, look at the names that I just rattled off to you. Like it's a ridiculously deep division. And if Dustin Poirier, for the first time in his career, like really as the champ, not inter as the champ, if he finds himself above Charles Oliveira, a bunch just above Justin Gaethje, who hits like a Mack truck, Michael Chandler, who is the one guy that everybody looked at and said he's actually the guy to beat Islam. He finds himself against up above Beneil Dariush and Dan Hooker and RDA and guys like that. Dustin Poirier could do whatever the hell it is that he wants if he retires at the age of 35. I think he has a fighting heart. I don't think he's going to do that. But I mean, like, we've all been talking about McGregor Poirier 4, which is the only quadrilogy that I'm willing to watch at that point. I don't want to see no more Brandon Royval and Moreno fight each other. But I mean, like, he's able to do that. He's able to do that. He's able to have to go. He's able to go after that fourth Conor fight and maybe put him away. He's able to retire. It's really his world after that.
I agree,
I
and
mean,
I think kind of to your point, there's a lot of money on the table, like the Conor Four or any other fights in Islam trilogy. I think that would definitely be on the cards here. Wait, am I mistaken? They have fought him before, right, Monty? I'm not losing my mind.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Islam and Dustin, this is two, right?
Islam and Dustin, this is going to be. No, I don't believe they fought. No, they haven't. They haven't. No. That was Khabib.
Oh,
You're probably thinking Khabib.
I am thinking of
Yeah,
Khabib.
same
All
camp.
the Dagestanis just kind of they get in my head and they're all
No.
kind of the same person. But anyway, this would be kind of setting up a natural rematch and then obviously the Conor fight. So there's a lot of money on the table, but Dustin also feels like kind of the guy who never really cares about that and kind of feels like the guy who, with his daughter there and with the title in his hands, maybe would ride off into the sunset. But I'm not really sure. That's kind of enough on that. I don't want to get too much into the hypothetical because at the end of the day, I think we all think that Islam is going to walk in there and walk out of there with the title. At the end of the day, even if our hearts may say something different. But just to kind of end this, we don't have a ton of time left. In this Zoom meeting that we are doing this pound for pound episode on, but just to kind of put a bow on this episode, I would love to talk about what we alluded to earlier, TKO, the company that owns WWE and UFC. Kind of puts the two together, puts the two companies closer together than they've been in decades. Even the two companies seemingly in a bit of a rivalry for a bit of time, especially when the Ultimate Fighter was on and they were vouching and they were fighting for TV ratings against each other. But now that they're in the same company, now that they're basically together in a lot of ways, it feels like that relationship has never been closer. So now that we have Mati Dembele, we have Will Zhang here. Will Zhang, a local fighter, a fighter wrestler that fights locally and kind of all around New York City. Will underscore Zhang underscore on Instagram, on his Insta story, you can see tickets and everything. All the events are there. Nonetheless, Will Zhang, Mati Dembele, I feel like it's only necessary to talk about what people in both companies can maybe do a little waltz over down the street to the other company and have major success. I would personally like to start. There's an MMA fighter that I think has been in the UFC for a while now that encapsulates what WWE is and gets what WWE is. Nobody does it better than Colby Covington. Colby Covington, in every single way, understands what it is. I think Will Zhang knows what I'm saying by it when I describe the WWE, when I describe the persona, when I describe all the whole package wrapped into one. It feels like Colby has understood that for a long time, ever since he was on a UFC roster, that people were getting tired of him, in complete honesty. And then kind of created this almost Ric Flair size character for himself and really almost skyrocketed himself all the way up into the top of the rankings in the welterweight division. So I feel like no other guy would really make that transition better than Colby Covington. And just as a guy in the cage, he's a fantastic wrestler. And I think his chain wrestling, along with just his athleticism, could be fantastic in the WWE. And I don't know, I think it would be awesome. But I think just antagonistically, he's fantastic. So yeah, Will, I'll let you go first. Maybe you can either go WWE star that goes to MMA or vice versa, whatever you're feeling.
All right. excuse me. I'll go with the trend here. You're going from MMA to WWE, so I'll continue that. And then I guess we could reverse it. But I'm going to go with I don't know how easy of a pick this is or obvious of a pick this is, but I think Israel Adesanya would be so like just I don't know about in ring, but he could be a difference maker just on the microphone with his personality. I think that would be. Yeah, and the star power, of course. I think that's something that's always been big in terms of people who transition from MMA to UFC, and a lot of them don't end up being the greatest in-ring performers. But you could allude to somebody like Ronda Rousey, who was fully MMA and then kind of fully made that transition. But I think that something that could make or break them is just character work, and I think Izzy can use that to stay relevant, stay afloat in wrestling. So, it's hard to say just knowing the inside of what happens in wrestling to see like who is really built for it. I've seen MJF at one point. He said he was like talking to some MMA guys and they tried like taking bumps and they're like, I would never do this. So to me, it's like it's not only just character. I mean, to me, the foundational aspects. Izzy has, but it's also like
And also,
who, yeah.
I just to jump in, I think because Izzy was villainized by the UFC audience kind of in like a natural way. So I feel like he would have almost a better understanding than anybody else of how to create a villain in almost like a natural way. Because he was kind of due to his corniness and his maybe like happy-go-luckiness got villainized, kind of like a Daniel Cormier or whatever. But like kind of, I don't know who else would be the WWE equivalent to that, but I feel like he understands how to build a heel, as we like to call it, in a really natural way and in a really effective way as well. I'm gonna go back to you, Will, to do it the other way. We don't have a ton of time, but just Mahdi, any MMA guys that you've seen that you're a fan of, whether that's on the mic or just their charisma in general, you think could maybe make it in Triple H's company?
So we got the usual suspects: Israel Adesanya, Sean Strickland, foremost among that. Colby Covington was a very, very good pick, Chris, because his personality was kind of manufactured. And to manufacture a personality that actually works and actually drums up attention is, I would argue, more. It's a more difficult task than naturally being like that. So credit to Colby there. But if you guys know an MMA guy, and Zach, you're gonna love this, my brother, Renato Moicano, Money Moicano. He has the name. He talks a lot. You guys gotta search him up on YouTube. Search up his post-fight interviews. They're hilarious. He it's like a psychopath. Like, he just goes on rants that make absolutely no sense. And he's a hell of a fighter. If you just saw his last fight at UFC 300, I mean, he just put away Jalen Turner, and it was in like 4 minutes and 11 seconds in the lightweight division. So he could talk, he could drum up attention because he's hilarious, and he has the nickname there, Money Moicano. That's Renato as his first name. I think he would be an excellent pick there.
I agree. I've seen his stuff online. Another one of these guys that just has these little bites of sound bites go out online, and they go viral in a sense. He would be fantastic for the WWE. And in the ring as well, I think he would be impressive. But Will, just throwing it to you, we got like a minute or so here. Just give me like a minute quick WWE guy you think maybe could do it for real in the UFC space.
I think Damian Priest could really do it. I
That's a
think.
big guy. I mean, he's up there in age. He's 40 years old. But that's a hell of a specimen.
I mean, world heavyweight champion, but not only that, he's been around the indies, and some people hit hard on the indies, so that tells me he knows how to absorb hits. The big lanky guy looks like he could throw kicks. So I think him, and just a sleeper pick, I think, that not a lot of people think would do it, but maybe could. I think a Sheamus. I don't know, man. I've heard that Sheamus is a hard hitter, and
I've seen
Sheamus
the
also
videos
has
in the gym
upsides.
too. I've seen the Celtic workout. That's a real deal.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go with those two.
You know who's a sleeper as well? I'll give you one as we walk off here with a few seconds left. That guy Valter hits so hard, dude. And I think with his size in the heavyweight division, Valter could be like a little, it could be like a little boa constrictor, like my boy Oliveira, maybe get a guy's back. Imagine Valter on your back, just choking the life out of you. That would be a scary sight. And I think you could do some damage in the UFC. But nonetheless, big week for UFC. I'd like to thank Mahdi Dembele and Will Zhang. Of course, Zach Cordova is going to be editing this and producing this, putting it all together, and we appreciate him as well. I just want to send a big congratulations to everybody. We're officially here. It's fight weekend, and I wish a good luck to everybody on their favorite fighter or how they want it to go tomorrow night. And get your popcorn ready because it's going to be a good one in Newark, New Jersey, UFC 302 at Prudential Center. Thank you to everyone. This has been a production of Pound for Pound, and this is a production of WFUV Sports. I'm Chris Carino.